Hello and welcome to Ox Talk for Tuesday, the 2nd of April 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers and recorded at home by Christine Churchill and Leslie Court. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 6:36 a.m. and sunset is at 7:40 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on April the 2nd in history. In 1681, King Charles II of England officially proclaimed the charter he granted to William Penn for the Quaker colony of Pennsylvania in North America. In 1912, at 6 a.m, the ill-fated RMS Titanic began sea trials in Belfast Lock and the Irish Sea, with 139 crew on board. Following these trials, it was declared seaworthy. The ship sailed for Southampton at about 8 p.m. that evening, where it would pick up the rest of the crew and all of the passengers to make its maiden voyage across the Atlantic to New York. In 1982, Argentine troops seized the Falkland Islands, precipitating the Falklands War with Britain, which lasted until the 14th of June of the same year. In 2023, footage of the deepest living fish ever recorded, the snailfish, was released. Caught on camera at a depth of 27,349 feet in the Izu Agawasara Trench, south of Japan. Born on this day, in 748, Charlemagne, King of the Franks from 786, King of the Lombards from 774, and probably most famously, Holy Roman Emperor from 800 until his death in 814. Born in 1914, Sir Alec Guinness, British actor, born Alec Guinness de Cuff in Maida Vale, London. He was known for the variety and excellence of his stage and screen characterizations in a career that lasted from 1934 until 1996. And born in 1924, Marlon Brando, American stage and screen actor, born in Omaha, Nebraska. Brando received various awards throughout his career, which spanned six decades, including two Academy Awards, two Golden Globes, one Cannes Film Festival Award, and three British Academy Film Awards. And deaths on this day. In 1502, Arthur, Prince of Wales, English Crown Prince, son of King Henry VII of England, first husband of Catherine of Aragon, died from an unknown illness, aged 15. Prince Arthur's death led to his younger brother becoming next in line to the throne. This brother was crowned as King Henry VIII in 1509. In 1872, Samuel Morse died, American painter and inventor who contributed to the invention of the electric telegraph and co-developed Morse code. He died at the age of 80. In 2005, Pope John Paul II died, aged 84. Born Karol Józef Wojtyła in Poland, he was one of the youngest popes in history and was the first non-Italian pope since Adrian VI in the 16th century, as well as the third longest serving pope after Pius IX and St. Peter. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
DJ Tony Blackburn has stepped down from presenting his radio show in the county. The veteran broadcaster presented his last Sunday afternoon show on BBC Radio Oxford at the weekend. He told listeners his years on BBC local stations, which began in 1981, had been a pleasure. Asked what had kept him in the role for so long, Blackburn pointed to his enthusiasm for radio and a deep love of music. Mr. Blackburn was presented with his OBE medal for services to broadcasting and charity by the Princess Royal at Windsor Castle last Wednesday. He was the first DJ on BBC Radio 1 when it launched in 1967 and went on to present a series of high-profile radio and TV shows, including Top of the Pops. He also won the first series of I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here in 2002. Mr. Blackburn said working on pirate radio stations, including Radio Caroline in the 1960s, was a real highlight of his career, and that the secret to a good radio show is having fun and playing the right music. He said streaming services such as BBC Sounds are the future of radio because listeners are not tied down to a particular time, while he admitted he wants to be at BBC Radio 2 when he does eventually decide to retire. He will now concentrate on his BBC Radio 2 shows and theatre tour.
A Sunday Times best-selling author is releasing a new book this May centred around her connection with the Oxfordshire and Wiltshire landscape. Clover Stroud's memoir, The Giant on the Skyline, explores the concept of home. With her children off to university and husband Pete working in America, Ms. Stroud left her rural life in Oxfordshire for Washington, D.C. The book looks at why she found it hard to leave home. Writer Emma Gannon said, "This incredibly special book will make you think of all the places and people you have ever called home." Author James Aldred added, "I'm blown away by Clover's writing. So impressive, inspiring, fluid, honest and resonant." Ms. Stroud will be launching her book at events in Wantage and Oxford.
Jeremy Clarkson is offering free kegs of his beloved Hawkstone Lager to pubs in the UK. The owner of Diddley Squat Farm, based in Oxfordshire, also promised that this is no gimmick and pub-goers should encourage their local to apply for one. The 63-year-old presenter made the announcement on TikTok earlier this week. Whilst holding a keg of his beloved Hawkstone Lager, the former Top Gear presenter said, "If you have a pub and you decide to start stocking Hawkstone, we will send you one of these, a keg, a full one. That's 88 free pints of the best lager in the world. No gimmicks, no jokes, that's it." Accompanying the TikTok video was the caption, "Calling all UK pubs, join the Hawkstone movement and support British farmers by stocking our beautiful British beer. We're giving away 500 free kegs of our delicious Hawkstone Premium Lager for UK pubs to try with our supporting partners. Apply now at hawkstone.com. Fans soon caught on and started joking in the comments. "I now identify as a pub. My pronouns are now hawk/stone, one user said. The official Hawkstone account then released another TikTok. "For those of you who identify as a pub but don't possess a pub licence, unfortunately our 500 free keg campaign is not for you."
Victoria Beckham has said a mobility scooter from her husband David is the best gift he ever bought me as she continues to nurse a broken foot. The singer and fashion designer showed off the green knee rover that the footballer customised with a bell, cup holder and basket, which Victoria joked she could use to hold wine. Victoria broke her foot in a gym accident in February. In a video on her Instagram story, Victoria showed David installing attachments on the four-wheeled bike.
Increased city centre car parking charges have been criticised by traders and branded a money-making scheme. Street parking charges in 14 areas of Oxford are set to rise on April the 15th from £13.20 to £15.20 for 2 hours. City Councillor Saj Malik of the Temple Cowley ward said, "Oxfordshire County Council is doing its best to kill trade in Oxford city centre in the name of preventing people from driving. Unfortunately, the majority of people paying are visitors. There are normally 8 to 10 million tourists a year. That is the figure before COVID, and we're getting back to that level now." Carfax and Jericho ward councillor Alex Hollingsworth felt less strongly about the increase, but said he was still frustrated parking in St Giles and Walton Street will cost the same. He added, "Obviously, car park charges have to go up. That's the way of the world. I think there will have been an impact on local businesses, but most are still going, so it hasn't had a calamitous impact. The council move has prompted mixed views from traders in the city. Adrian King, who runs a vintage garment store, Again Garments, said, "Parking is a big concern of mine. Street parking doesn't really work for us traders because you have to move your car after 2 hours. My frustration is I think a lot of people understand we need to transition into a world where we're not using cars as much, but the issue is the way we transition. Your options for nipping into town are quite slim, so this will impact me indirectly." Graham MacDonald, who works at the ice cream store in the covered market, has said he appreciates why there is a down on cars coming into Oxford, but he added, "I don't think there are adequate alternatives in place. My 8:24 a.m. bus arrived this morning at 9:15. Oxfordshire County Council said people also have the option of using off-street parking or the park and ride facilities located around the city. A combined parking and bus 24-hour ticket at park and ride locations costs £4 for a car and one adult bus ticket, or £5 for a car and two adult bus tickets. A county council spokesman added, "All parking income is and has always only been spent on transport-related schemes in Oxfordshire."
A new study has unveiled Oxford Railway Station as having the highest parking fees for train stations in the UK outside of London. The research compared parking costs for an 8-hour stay during weekdays across the busiest train stations in the UK, shedding light on the financial burdens commuters face. According to the findings by car finance company Money Barn, Oxford Railway Station leads the pack with a staggering parking fee of £31.50 for 8 hours for non-rail users. The station is one of two serving the city and has an annual footfall of over 5 million visitors as of March 2022, ranking it the 15th busiest station on the list. Overall, the station ranks fifth on the list, including London stations, with Gatwick Airport charging the most at £50 for an 8-hour stay. Phew. A Great Western Railway spokesman said, "Oxford Station car park is £7 a day for rail customers. Part of the car park's original planning consent was a stipulation that it did not undercut prices at nearby local authority car parks, so non-railway customers are charged more." Following closely behind Oxford, Glasgow Central and Moorfields in Liverpool share the second spot, with parking charges of £24.95 for an 8-hour stay. Glasgow Central, being Scotland's largest city, attracts a massive footfall of 15 million annually, cementing its position as one of the busiest train stations in the UK. Meanwhile, despite hosting fewer passengers annually, Moorfields matches Glasgow Central's parking fees at £24.95 for 6 to 24 hours. The findings come as street parking costs in 14 areas of Oxford are set to rise on April the 15th from £13.20 to £15.20 for 2 hours. The increase is being applied to Beaumont Street, Blackhall Road, Cromwell Street, Keble Road, King Edward Street and Longwall Street. Also included are Mansfield Road, Merton Street, Museum Road, Parks Road, Savile Road, St Giles, Wellington Square and Woodstock Road. Oxfordshire County Council said people also have the option of using off-street parking or the park and ride facilities located around the city. A combined parking and bus 24-hour ticket at park and ride locations is £4 for a car and one adult bus ticket, or £5 for a car and two adult bus tickets. Elsewhere in the city, cheap car parking for shoppers at an Oxford college looks set to be banned by Oxford City Council. Since 2012, the City of Oxford College has been renting out about 91 spaces at its college off Oxpens Road at weekends and during college holidays. For £6, you can park all day on site.
Oxford United have ended their long-awaited search for a new analyst with the appointment of Arsenal Women's Joe Moore. Moore has been supporting Isaac Alder in an unofficial capacity for a number of weeks while he worked his notice period at Arsenal. That has now been completed, though, with Moore now officially a member of the United backroom staff. U's head coach Des Buckingham said, "Joe is somebody I worked with in New Zealand. He worked at Fulham and supported their first team staff and was heavily involved in the academy set-up and then moved across to New Zealand. I worked with him for 3 years, and since he's returned, he's been at Arsenal. When I got the opportunity to bring him here, it made total sense. He knows the way I want to do things, and it makes it a lot easier to hit the ground running. He's a good person, and that's what we want around this building. He's an analyst who isn't just somebody who sits behind a computer. He's someone who understands the game. The good thing with that is that it allows us to fast-track a lot of things that we haven't been able to do so far, whether it's development plans for players or a few other things that can have a greater impact in the building. With the individual development plans, the idea is that all the players will be very clear on working on at least one area of their individual development, whilst we try and build the team style and philosophy around them. It's important that we continue to develop and coach these players, and coach them individually as well as collectively. With the analysis role, we can use game footage and training footage that we have every day, and the analysis department can pull that together and show a real clear process on a working way together. Former analyst Krause performed a mixed role, working as a first-team coach too, something Moore will also do at United. Buckingham said, "It'll be a more of a hybrid in almost an assistant coach and analyst type role."
A historic building in Oxford city centre has been allowed to deteriorate. The former Chinese restaurant opposite the Westgate Centre is looking in a very poor state of repair. But 29 and 29A Castle Street cannot be demolished because it is so historic that it's Grade 2 listed. Tom Hassell, who lives in West Oxford, has called for action and an end to the downward spiral of neglect. He said last year Save Britain's Heritage, the independent voice on conservation, placed this building on its own Buildings at Risk register. Save recognised the fact that this building contains within it remains of an original medieval structure. It is the only building ever to have occupied this site at the entrance to Oxford Castle. It is now the last remaining link to the wealth of vernacular buildings which once lined this street. It is to be hoped that the owner will carry out immediate repairs or, if not, that the City Council will use its own powers of persuasion to ensure that this significant listed part of our city's heritage does not fall into further decay. The building was most recently used as a restaurant, but it has been closed for a number of years. It's understood that the owners live abroad and the City Council has been unable to contact them. The building was listed Grade 2 in 1977, and that dates the structure as late 17th century. But conservation lobby group Save Britain's Heritage said it was even older. A statement on its website says, "The year before the date of the listing, an unpublished set of notes and drawings, now lodged in the archive of the Oxfordshire History Centre, indicated that there is evidence of medieval roofing in the cellar, that two timber-framed walls survive from the original superstructure, and that there was a medieval roof running parallel to Castle Street with king struts, collars and clasped purlins. The notes also record that the structure is shown on Agas's map of 1578 between the Westgate and the Castle Bridge. So this unassuming and neglected building is actually a highly significant structure in terms of Oxford archaeology, and represents an early stage of domestic encroachment on the castle outworks." A spokesman for the City Council said, "Historic England's Building at Risk register only includes Grade 1 and 2 star buildings. 29 to 29A Castle Street is Grade 2, and so not on the register. We are aware of the very poor condition of the building and have sought to engage with the building owners, but despite our efforts, communication from them continues to be limited."
A long queue of people stretched around the side of Oxford Crown Court as eager visitors waited for a peep behind the scenes. The doors of the Criminal and Family Court in St Aldate's were opened on Saturday to welcome curious members of the public for an educational insight into the court system. Guests were able to try on judges' gowns, sit in their seats, hear how they prepare for cases, listen in on mock trials, and even make the walk from the dock to the cells. The open day of the building, which dates back to the 1930s, aimed to show how the court and its staff serve the community and deliver justice. Nick Goodwin, CEO of HM Courts and Tribunals Service, added, "We're delighted to be opening our doors to the public in Oxford, sharing all the work we do here to make sure justice is delivered for victims. Our courts are working at full throttle to tackle the backlogs, and we are investing £220 million for essential modernisation and repair work of our court buildings." The mock trials, which included real barristers and judges who worked daily from Oxford Crown Court, included a scandalous Harry Potter-themed tale of a defendant named Albus Dumbledore, who was accused of waving a knife threateningly at the complainant Hermione Granger over a dispute about ruined exam papers. Volunteer juries would deliberate and deliver a verdict on Dumbledore while onlookers filled the courtrooms. Guests were also welcomed underneath the court to explore the cells. Dock and custody officers showed off the cells, some of which included a chalkboard for defendants to use while waiting for sentencing or during breaks in trials. The food, which is heated up for defendants, was also on display, as well as the full body uniform some officers may need to wear if defendants start an affray, though this is reportedly uncommon. Outside the cells, guests were given a tour of the mini-cells on Serco transport buses, which can be as small as 3 cells or up to 12. Alongside this vehicle were multiple police cars and a motorcycle, with officers explaining how sirens can be turned on and off and which equipment is necessary for their road traffic policing, such as emergency lights and signs. The current Crown Court building was built in the 1930s in the neoclassical style by the famous motor industrialist William Morris to act as a showroom for his pioneering Morris Motors brand. It was subsequently turned into a court in 1985. Court hearings have taken place in the city as far back as the 12th century. In July 1577, prominent Catholic Roland Jenks was sentenced to be pilloried by the ears for making foul-mouthed and saucy comments about Queen Elizabeth I in a local tavern. In furious retribution, Jenks allegedly cursed the judge and jury, causing considerable local panic when several members of the trial subsequently fell sick and died. The building hears criminal cases from across Oxfordshire daily, as well as family and civil matters.
A riverside pub in Oxford has announced its reopening date following a sudden closure this month. The head of the river on St Aldate's sits beside the River Thames in the heart of the city and is a popular spot, especially in the summer, given its scenic views. It suddenly closed on Friday, March the 8th for major renovations, despite welcoming a full beer garden the Sunday before, with the warm weather hitting the city. Scaffolding can now be seen covering the face of the building, which is owned by Fuller's Brewery, as changes are enacted inside the building. It is not yet known what the full extent of the alterations is and whether they are mainly structural or cosmetic, but a reopening date has been given for the pub. The popular watering hole hopes to reopen by early May, according to the signage outside the pub, which is attached to the temporary hoardings. A spokesperson for the pub said, "If you're walking past at the moment, you'll notice that things look a little different. The team are working extremely hard behind the scenes, and we're excited to reopen as soon as possible." The pub is also looking for new staff members ahead of the grand reopening, with adverts placed for both a reception manager and an assistant manager.
3 generations of the family of a Holocaust survivor will visit a museum on the eve of the anniversary of the liberation of the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp. Descendants of Naomi Warren will fly into the UK from America to visit the Soldiers of Oxfordshire Museum in Woodstock on April the 13th. The event will mark the anniversary of Bergen-Belsen's liberation on April 15, 1945. The museum has an exhibition in Ms. Warren's honour entitled Naomi and Arthur, Letters from Liberation, which opened on Holocaust Memorial Day. The exhibition narrates the story of how Arthur Tyler, a soldier with the Oxfordshire Yeomanry stationed at Bergen-Belsen, helped Naomi Kaplan, a camp survivor, to reconnect with her family. Their meeting paved the way for a bright future. Once in the USA, Ms. Warren became a successful businesswoman, ran an international meat import and processing company, and was a mother to three children. Her legacy lives on through her family, and the Warren Fellowship for Future Teachers, an educational program established by her children as a tribute to their mother. Ursula Corcoran, director of the museum, said, "Letters from Liberation is a wartime story with a difference, focusing on an act of kindness and the courage of survival."
Nearly 100 roads in Oxfordshire are set to benefit from a £7 million highway maintenance programme due to start this spring. Oxfordshire County Council and its contractor, Milestone Infrastructure Limited, are set to visit more than 50 locations between April the 8th and June the 3rd to execute surface dressing work. Surface dressing involves applying bituminous emulsion onto the road as a binder. This is followed immediately by the application of chippings to dress the emulsion layer. The Department for Transport's Road Resurfacing Fund is injecting £2.6 million into the project. The project will see 1 million square metres of carriageway treated in what will be the largest surface dressing programme to take place in Oxfordshire in over two decades. Bill Cotton, Oxfordshire County Council's Corporate Director for Environment and Place, said, "We know how important the quality of our roads is to our residents, and this significant programme of work will help keep many miles of highways in a better condition for years to come." Surface dressing is one of the most cost-effective methods of roads maintenance, and spring is the best time to start this programme of work. "We would urge motorists to watch out for notifications of the work taking place and to drive carefully after it has been carried out. Motorists are advised to navigate newly treated roads cautiously, as the friction from tyres can dislodge loose chips, increasing the risk of skidding and other damage. To prevent this, an advisory speed limit of 20 miles an hour will be enforced in these areas." Richard Lovewell, Business Director for Milestone's Oxfordshire contract, said, "We're proud to be embarking on Oxfordshire's biggest programme of this kind in 20 years. We've planned the work in a way that minimises disruption and maximises efficiencies. We've also positioned Oxfordshire right at the start of the national surface dressing season." Roads Minister Guy Opperman added, "Motorists in Oxfordshire deserve safe, modern and smooth roads they can rely on. I'm delighted to see Oxfordshire County Council making good use of the £2.6 million government funding we have provided to tackle potholes and keep motorists moving across the county. We're taking decisive action to resurface roads and fix potholes by investing an extra £8.3 billion in the biggest ever funding increase for local road improvements. The surface dressing seals the road surface, preventing water penetration, one of the leading causes of deterioration and potholes. It also contributes to less road surface deterioration whilst restoring the necessary skid resistance level. It extends worn-out road surfaces' longevity, yielding more value for limited highway maintenance budgets." The heir to the Belgian throne, who is studying at the University of Oxford, has met Barack Obama. Crown Princess Elizabeth, who is on a history and politics course at Lincoln College, is the eldest of King Philippe and Queen Matilda of Belgium's four children. The 22-year-old met the former US president with her father at the Castle of Laeken in Brussels. After Mr. Obama spoke to the Belgian royals, the 44th US president gave a keynote speech at a technology event near Antwerp. The princess wore a royal blue two-piece as she was photographed alongside her father and Mr. Obama. Princess Elizabeth made headlines in February after befriending a fellow student at Oxford who is studying history at the same college as her. Nicholas Dodd from Rochdale first met the princess on their matriculation day in October 2021, and since then the pair have allegedly become close. According to a Belgian newspaper, as per The Times, the pair have developed a relationship that transcends friendship. Before moving to Oxford, Princess Elizabeth studied at Atlantic College, a boarding school set in a 12th century castle in the Vale of Glamorgan.
Cotswold Wildlife Park has been crowned the best zoo in the UK. Reviews, admission fees, parking costs, variety of species and overall zoo popularity were all taken into consideration to reveal the best UK zoos for families in a list by Outdoor Toys. It said, taking first place in the ranking, the Cotswold Wildlife Park exhibits over 260 different species of animals and holds a 4.5-star rating on TripAdvisor with over 4,300 reviews. The popular park is a great spot for families on a budget, as children's tickets are just £13.50 and parking is free. Some spectacular sights include the rhinos grazing in front of the park's Gothic listed manor house and the boisterous lemurs in the Madagascar exhibit. In 2023, the Scenic Wildlife Park, set in 160 acres of landscaped park with its own miniature railway near Burford, won a hat-trick of awards. It was named Best Family Attraction at both the Muddy Stilettos Awards and Little Ankle Biters Awards. It was also voted Best Animal Attraction in the Red Kite Days Oxfordshire Awards. Reggie Hayworth, Managing Director, said, "These awards are a real tribute to the work of a lot of people at the Cotswold Wildlife Park who do so much to keep it looking beautiful and keep the animals well and happy."
A coroner has ruled the death of a 27-year-old scientist who died while on a cycling holiday in Italy as accidental. Susanna Boddy of Park Corner in Nettlebed near Henley died from a severe head injury after crashing into a concrete wall on her bike. She had been descending a steep mountain trail near Lake Garda on August the 11th last year. The lead health data scientist for 10 Downing Street's science team, who had helped steer the UK through the COVID-19 pandemic, was on holiday with her boyfriend, Robert Johnson, at the time of the accident. An inquest held at Oxford Coroner's Court heard that Miss Boddy was an avid cyclist and had been training for an Ironman. Senior Coroner Darren Salter ruled the death as accidental. During the inquest, it was heard that Miss Boddy and Mr. Johnson had been cycling from Lake Garda and Verona when they came across a steep decline in the mountains above Toscolano Maderno. In a written statement to the coroner, Mr. Johnson said, "We were on the last day cycling. Everything was normal and we were cycling for about 30 minutes and it was mostly downhill. We were following a GP route that took us down a smaller, steeper road, but nothing I wasn't comfortable doing and nothing Susanna hadn't done before. I was slightly ahead and suddenly she came flying past me and seemed out of control. She went round a bend ahead of me, out of sight." He said when he caught up with Miss Boddy, he could see she had crashed into a wall and appeared to be breathing, but was bleeding from her mouth. A passing couple stopped to help, and emergency services arrived 30 minutes later due to the rural location. After 45 minutes of treatment, they pronounced Miss Boddy dead. Miss Boddy's family had her bike, which she brought to Italy herself, examined, and it was considered a possibility that the inner tube of the front wheel had exploded, rendering the brakes useless. It was heard that the bike had been fine the day before. The couple had been taking downhill routes. Coroner Mr. Salter said, "I'm not entirely sure if we will get to the bottom of what went wrong." After concluding that the incident had been an accidental death, Mr. Salter said, "She was an inspiring woman, an incredible scientist, and was loved and admired by all. She had achieved so much in her short life."
Ardent fans have been thrilled by rumours of a new TV series and a movie, but for the village that doubles as the fictional Downton, its fame has proved a mixed blessing. It's been reported that a new secret seventh series of Downton Abbey has begun filming. And fans may not have long to wait to see the lives of the aristocratic Yorkshire Crawley family on movie screens once more, as a new film is also rumoured to be in the pipeline. It's thought producers are hoping to bring back some huge names for the return of the show, including Hugh Bonneville, Michelle Dockery, Elizabeth McGovern and Joanne Froggatt. The seventh series is expected to air at the end of this year on ITV. Last week, Imelda Staunton, who plays one of Queen Mary's ladies-in-waiting, Lady Maud Bagshawe, let it slip on Zoe Ball's Radio 2 show that there will be a third Downton Abbey film. Bampton in West Oxfordshire, which doubled as Downton for the TV show, was besieged with fans after it debuted in 2010 and became something of a cultural phenomenon. Although the issues are now less, one resident told the Oxford Mail last year that fans stuck selfie sticks up to his bedroom windows and he felt like he was living in a zoo. The owner of the manor house where Mrs. Crawley lived described it as a very mixed blessing. However, the show brought substantial tourism to the village, with a dedicated local group of volunteers manning the shop, guiding visitors and managing the traffic. And some local fans welcomed it. A 37-year-old mum said, "The businesses here, the new coffee shop and restaurant, will need more than just local trade to keep them alive." Although another added, "Some of them ask where the big house is and are disappointed when they're told it is Highclere Castle, which is miles away from here." Establishing relations with all the coach companies also helped with traffic issues after they were told to park coaches on the wreck. Cogs Manor Farm in Whitney also benefited from the ITV series and runs tours and exhibitions. It was turned into Yew Tree Farm, the home of the Drew family where Lady Edith's child is brought up, and later home to Mr. Mason. In the second Downton movie, A New Era, Daisy and Mrs. Patmore chatted over a stove in the kitchen of the manor house, which doubled as the fictional country estate. Carnival Films were contacted about the TV series and movie, but declined to comment.
A care provider with 17 locations in Oxfordshire has been ranked in the top 20 care home groups in the UK. The Orders of St John Care Trust has been recognised for its exceptional care, receiving the award from carehome.co.uk, based on reviews by its residents, their relatives and friends. Dan Hayes, Chief Executive at the Orders of St John Care Trust, said, "We are delighted to receive a top 20 care home group award for another year running. This award, based on reviews by those who live in one of our homes and by their families, is a reflection of the trust placed in us by our residents and their loved ones. The award also recognises the hard work and dedication of all my colleagues. I am so proud of the loving care, dignity, respect and happiness our teams bring to every individual in our care. They are truly deserving of this accolade." There are nearly 17,000 care homes across the UK, caring for approximately 500,000 people. This includes more than 12,000 homes supporting older people aged 65 and over, with about half of these seniors covering the costs of their own care. The remaining institutions take care of individuals with learning disabilities and mental health issues, largely funded by local authorities. The UK population includes 11 million individuals aged 65 or older, which is equivalent to 19% of the total population. The demand for care homes is set to continue increasing as people are living longer. Amanda Hopkins, Reviews Manager of carehome.co.uk, acknowledged the achievements of the Orders of St John Care Trust. She said, "It's a huge achievement to be named as one of the top 20 care home groups in the UK by the residents and their families who've experienced for themselves the care and support being given at the care home. We would like to congratulate the Orders of St John Care Trust on being a top care home group. Our awards, which celebrate the excellent care given by care home groups, Show the Orders of St John Care Trust ensures it gives first-rate care throughout its homes. These top-performing care home groups are making a profound difference to residents' lives as they put compassion, respect and dignity at the centre of their care. To view the Orders of St John Care Trust's reviews, visit the award provider's website.
About 900 runners took to the grounds of Blenheim Palace to raise an expected £100,000 for Oxford Children's Hospital. Now in its 23rd year, the OX5 run on Sunday saw participants enjoying a pleasant spring morning for the occasion. 14-year-old Giovanna Santos, a regular patient on Cameron's ward due to a rare form of cancer, neuroblastoma, started the race. Giovanna, who goes by the name Jo, took part in the 5-mile event with her friends and family, alongside multiple teams of families, hospital staff and members of the business community. The winner of this year's run was the youngest ever to take the title, 12-year-old Leo Blyton, who completed the run in 30 minutes and 41 seconds. Mr. Blyton, a member of Beth's Bees running team, is familiar with Oxford Children's Hospital as his younger brother Zach received cancer treatment there when he was 7. The first woman to finish the race was Anna Kelly, crossing the finish line in 32 minutes and 27 seconds. Ms. Kelly is part of the 36-member Oxford Vaccine Group team, which has participated in the OX5 run every year since it was launched, with the support of the Oxford Mail. The top individual fundraiser on the day was Chris Fulwell, who has raised more than £3,000, with donations still coming in. Mr. Fulwell's baby son is currently being treated for serious seizures at the hospital, providing him with first-hand experience of the impact of fundraising proceeds. The event raises funds for important facilities for the Oxford Children's Hospital, such as play areas, sensory equipment and specialist medical technology. Runner timings and further information about the event can be found online. The charity's social media accounts have photos from the event and donations can still be made to the runners.
Bill Nighy said filming the beautiful game alongside those who had experienced the Homeless World Cup was very affecting. The British actor stars as the manager of England's homeless football team in Thea Sharrock's Netflix sports drama about the annual Homeless World Cup, an international football tournament for homeless people. It's basically me and a bunch of young nutters running around Rome in the hottest summer in recorded memory. That's the reality, Nighy told a news agency during a special screening of the film in London ahead of its launch on March the 29th. One thing that was very affecting was the fact that a lot of the people who came to play the other teams, like the Japanese, French, German team, they were people who had already gone through the Homeless World Cup process and were no longer homeless and were rehabilitated. So that was very affecting. In the film, Nighy's character Mal takes his players to Rome in the hope of being crowned champions of the Homeless World Cup, and at the last minute adds talented striker Vinny, played by Michael Ward, to the team. The 74-year-old said the stadium was built in the middle of Rome and the teams had to appear every day for filming as a heatwave spread across the country. He told the agency, "I was lucky I didn't have to play football, but the boys did. It was so hot that the Italian government warned people not to leave the safety of their homes. You figure it's probably for real, but the boys had to play football all day long, so they were heroic." Nighy described the film as special because it's about something special. It's a funny movie, it's designed to make you laugh and to be touching and to move you a little and also deliver the information about the Homeless World Cup, he added. British actress Susan Wacoma, who plays the manager of the South African team in the film, said all the players on her team had previously played in the Homeless World Cup. "All the men on my team are real players who have participated in the Homeless World Cup, and that was the case for nearly everybody that you see on screen, apart from the actors who have written dialogue. So you're meeting these people from all over the world who have also hung out together, played together, partied together. It was a big reunion for them, so you felt really responsible that they were having a really good time. British director Sharrock said the film talks about homelessness, it takes the taboo away, and it celebrates what the individual can be and how we can change their lives. I think it's very, very authentic, real stories that have come through the organisation. That is one of the things we worked so hard to create. And I think for that reason, it has got real heart and soul, she said.
The Bodleian Libraries have been donated a rare autograph from composer Johann Sebastian Bach. The manuscript of Bach's cantata for Ascension Day, Auf Christi Himmelfahrt allein, is one of only four in the UK in the hand of the legendary composer. The gift has been accepted via the Acceptance in Lieu scheme to offset inheritance tax, and it has been allocated to the Bodleian. The manuscript will be publicly displayed from March the 15th at the Western Library's Treasury. The donation was originally owned by collector Ralph Cohn and is known as the Cohn Manuscript. It provides a detailed insight into one of Bach's best cantatas, and despite slight erosion around the edges, it is regarded as one of the best-preserved Bach autographs. Richard Ovenden, Bodley's librarian, said, "The Bodleian has collected music in a serious way since its foundation over 400 years ago, but a significant manuscript in the hand of one of the greatest composers of all time, Johann Sebastian Bach, has eluded us until now." Bach's compositions proved significant to the evolution of Western music. With the vast majority of his works never published during his lifetime, the existence and survival of his autographs are critical in maintaining the memory of his musical grandeur. Bach's finest manuscripts are mostly found in Berlin, Leipzig, and institutions in Germany, Poland, and the USA. Only three other Bach autographs exist in the UK. There are two at the British Library and one at the Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge. Martin Holmes, Alfred Brendel Curator of Music at Bodleian Libraries, said, "It must be every music librarian's dream to be given custody of a Bach autograph, and the library is honoured to have been entrusted with this magnificent manuscript." Plans are underway for a performance commemorating the tercentenary of the original performance of the cantata in 1725. The manuscript, previously exhibited at Buckingham Palace, forms a significant part in the UK's manuscript curation history. It will join the Bodleian's Special Collections Music Archive and continue to influence Bach's study, performance and appreciation in Oxford.
A new online application system for Oxford City Council's General Housing Register has been launched. Previously, applicants had to download a PDF and email their supporting evidence. However, the new digital system is designed to be faster, more straightforward and accessible, and can be accessed via various devices. The new system includes an up-to-date built-in eligibility checker to help people make informed decisions about their social housing requirements. The online form means people need to submit the evidence needed to assess their application when they apply. This aims to reduce processing times and limit the need for further communication during the assessment process. There are more than 3,300 households already on the housing register, and the council receives about 1,300 new applications a year. The new online system is expected to streamline applicants effectively by checking their eligibility at the very start. Individuals wishing to apply can now do so directly on the council's website. The old PDF forms, however, are no longer available for download, though unprocessed applications will continue to be handled. For information, people can call the council on 01865 249 811.
The UK Space Agency is set to open a new headquarters in Oxfordshire to support the space sector. The agency's new headquarters will be based in Harwell Science Campus's Space Cluster, while regional offices are due to open in Scotland, Wales and the Midlands. This move aligns with the government's levelling up strategy, aimed at fostering growth in the burgeoning UK space sector while enabling the agency to work more intimately with sector stakeholders. The strategy is also aimed towards promoting regional skills and job opportunities to undertake a range of missions and capabilities. Statistics suggest that the UK space sector is growing at an unprecedented pace, surpassing the economy's overall expansion rate. The sector's worth exceeds £17.5 billion per year and employs more than 45,000 people, with satellites contributing £360 billion per year of wider economic activity. Andrew Griffith MP, Minister for Space at the Department for Science, Innovation and Technology, said Harwell's Space Cluster is already a hub of collaboration with more than 100 thriving research organisations and 1,400 jobs, making it the ideal location for the UK Space Agency's new headquarters. At the same time, our space sector has grown considerably across all parts of the UK, and new offices in Edinburgh, Cardiff and Leicester will serve the talented space researchers and innovators around the country, while creating more jobs, growing our local economies and strengthening the UK's science superpower ambitions. Dr. Paul Bate, CEO of the UK Space Agency, said, "This is a transformational moment for the UK Space Agency, responding directly to the feedback that the agency should be embedded in the sector. Our new headquarters, located at the UK's biggest space cluster in Harwell, will connect to regional offices in Edinburgh, Cardiff and Leicester, helping us recruit space talent from across the nation and deliver the National Space Strategy. The restructuring would present significant opportunities to develop high-growth areas like Earth observation and satellite broadband. It will also support the UK's pursuit of early leadership in emerging markets such as in-orbit spacecraft servicing, active space debris removal, and the new lunar economy. This would aid in cultivating a greener, smarter, and more inclusive sector. In addition to the new locations, the agency will retain its offices in London and Swindon." Stuart Grant, Chief Executive of Harwell Campus, said, "We're delighted to welcome the UK Space Agency to the thriving space cluster of over 100 organisations at Harwell Campus. Their presence cements the campus's position as a leading international space hub and will help leverage synergies, drive innovation and foster partnerships with key industry players."
Oxfordshire's roads will be used to trial AI-assisted automated decision-making in traffic control rooms with the aim of reducing congestion. Altura Data Technologies, Oxfordshire County Council and the Greater Cambridge Partnership have teamed up with Cambridgeshire County Council to secure funding for the project from Innovate UK. A range of data regarding vehicles, active travel and roadworks will be used to enable smarter decision-making in regional control rooms. Currently, regional traffic control rooms grapple with the process of using different types of data concurrently, limiting their understanding of disruptions on the roads. They resort to making manual decisions that can affect the movement of pedestrians and vehicles. With Alcura's AI closely monitoring road conditions in real time, authorities will gain recommendations to improve traffic flow. The results will demonstrate to authorities how they can reduce congestion, make bus services more reliable, and promote sustainable travel, all of which will support in reaching their net zero targets. Anna Jordan, co-founder of Alcura, said, "It's fantastic to be working with two of our long-standing customers on this project. In both regions, we already integrate with thousands of sensors to ingest and analyse the mobility data underpinning this work. Dealing with real-time data in potentially congested, urbanised areas is challenging, so helping to automate the difficult decisions control rooms must make every day is paramount to a well-functioning transport network. Oxfordshire and Cambridge are both already using Alcura's Data Hub platform, they can access mobility data through this platform, which helps them in making informed decisions concerning travel. Katie Parnell, Future Mobility and Placemaking Team Leader at Oxfordshire County Council, said partnering on this project was an easy decision. As regions, we share close strategic links and face similar challenges, which can be addressed by making better use of the data we already have available. Oxfordshire County Council are keen to support innovation that decreases our carbon footprint and makes sustainable travel a better option for our citizens. Daniel Clark, Head of Innovation and Technology for Greater Cambridge Partnership, added, "This project will give us an insight into how roadworks affect different travel options. By understanding these impacts, we can shape our strategies to encourage more people to choose sustainable travel. Imagine smoother journeys, less time stuck in traffic, and shorter commutes. That's what we're aiming for." The Greater Cambridge Partnership's goals are to cut congestion, improve bus reliability, and make sustainable travel a more attractive and viable option for everyone in our community. This is not just about roads, it's about making everyone's daily travel experience better, greener, and faster. A terror attack victim has spoken about his experiences and his work with an Oxford-based charity to mark the 7th anniversary of the killings. Travis Frayne suffered injuries during the Westminster Bridge attack of March 22, 2017, where an individual used a hired vehicle to target pedestrians before leaving the car to strike at nearby citizens with a bladed weapon. Mr. Frayne, who was a 19-year-old university student at the time, was among the roughly 50 people injured, with another 6 individuals losing their lives. Since the incident, Mr. Frayne has put relentless efforts into raising awareness on the threats of terrorism and campaigning for enhanced vigilance and protection. As part of this mission, he became a patron of Oxford's emergency bandages charity, RAPAID. Mr. Frayne, awarded an OBE in the King's New Year's Honours List, now serves as an advisor for the National Counter-Terrorism Advisory Group. His contributions to counter-terrorism include delivering training workshops to an impressive tally of more than 100,000 young individuals. He also continuously helped to raise awareness about RAPAID's vital work of releasing their life-saving kits of emergency bandages to taxis and public places across Britain. On the anniversary of the Westminster Bridge atrocity, Alex Chivers, co-founder of RAPAID, spoke to Mr. Frayne about his journey to recovery and his role in the fight against terrorism. Mr. Frayne said, "The attack changed my life massively. I went through a long stage of not knowing what I wanted to do career-wise. After a long time of being aimless, I essentially decided that I was going to commit myself to counter-terrorism and to doing what I could to try and improve things for other victims in future, as well as trying to prevent these kinds of attacks from happening, full stop." He strongly believes that people should be given first aid training and be able to recognise potential terror attack warning signs. He insists that awareness of advice from the police, such as stop, hide, tell, is fundamental in combating such incidents. The training, he said, is available free online at T-Protect UK and takes less than an hour to complete. Mr. Frayne played a pivotal role in founding the Resilience Project, which aims to gather and disseminate testimonials of those affected by terrorism. He said, "The Resilience and Unity Project seeks to record and disseminate the testimonials of those affected by terrorism. I helped found it to raise awareness of these issues and to make it clear to people that these issues can affect anyone. To improve resilience to the violence that's prevalent in society, he suggests people enhance their recognition of these issues. The bare minimum people can do is first aid training, and any other training on top of that only helps even more to be well prepared," Mr. Frayne said. Acknowledging RAPAID's role in equipping society for the next incident, Mr. Frayne commended the charity's provision of emergency kits that enable the public to stabilise injuries until professional help arrives. As a patron, his aim is to use the platform he has gained through the media's focus on his experience to highlight the exceptional work RAPAID is doing. He claims the charity has received overwhelming support from other survivors who see from their personal experiences the importance of the cause. Finally, Mr. Frayne encourages people to reach out and understand the importance of supporting organisations like RAPAID, stating, "We'll be more than happy to make clear why this is so important and to show how this could have made a real difference in saving the lives of the many people lost in terror attacks in the past."
An unforgettable night of celebrating Taylor Swift has been promised for Oxford next month. The All Too Well singer does not bring her Eras tour to the UK until summer 2024, but that won't stop Swifties from getting their fix. Swift announced that she would be dropping the Eras film on Disney Plus earlier this month, which went on to break Disney records. Now, the Bullingdon venue in Oxford is hosting a special night. Fixer posted a call out on their website. "Attention all Swifties and lovers of pop perfection. Taylor Swift has a new album and we're going to celebrate in Oxford this April. Get ready for an unforgettable night filled with love, music, memories and the enchanting world of Taylor Swift. Swifties unite. Immerse yourself in the world of one of the biggest pop sensations of our time as we celebrate the music, style and spirit of Taylor Swift. Our talented DJs will be spinning nothing but Taylor Swift hits all night long, from the early country tunes to the pop anthems that have dominated the charts. Immerse yourself in the evolution of Taylor's incredible musical journey. The event will be from 11 p.m. to 3 a.m. on Thursday, April the 25th at the Bullingdon, Oxford. The event is for people aged 18 and over."
Hollywood star Damian Lewis spontaneously sang "I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles" for Scottish fans who travelled to Oxford to see him. The actor is famed for his roles in Billions and Homeland, but recently began a music career, releasing debut album Mission Creep last summer. Mr. Lewis, who starred as legendary actor Steve McQueen in Quentin Tarantino's Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, has been on a live music tour across the UK. He called at Oxford for a gig at the O2 Academy and played a selection of his songs from the album, as well as new tunes. In the crowd were a couple of women who had travelled down from Scotland to watch the performance. The pair made Mr. Lewis aware of this after shouting during a break between songs, and given their nationality and the distance they had travelled, the singer replied in song. He spontaneously started to sing the classic Scottish song, "I'm Gonna Be 500 Miles," by the Proclaimers. The women, as well as the rest of the crowd, were left stunned, but then joined in with singing and clapping as Mr. Lewis put on quite the show. Combining blues and rock, the 53-year-old Band of Brothers star made sure it was a gig to remember for the Oxford audience, especially so for the Scottish contingent.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week.